Good morning, Manassas. It's a delight, an honor, and a blessing to be here with you this morning. And I want to thank my friend, the Reverend Charlotte, for her ongoing and inspiring leadership in these troubling times, and also for her invitation to join you this fine morning. I need to express my profound, profound gratitude for the musical gifts again. So thank you so much. That was really wonderful. Thank you for your ministry. The room is totally blessed with all of this. This is awesome. But the wonderful building you have here, too. Nice. I appreciate y'all voting the sun in for this morning, for being able to come in. I appreciate lighting up the light. That was really nicely done. So whoever did that, thank you. So today, I want to bring greetings from your friends and neighbors up in Frederick, Maryland, where my wife and I are currently members. And just tell you, it's just really great to be here in this thriving community. Today's sermon was inspired by the opening of Thomas King's book, The Truth About Stories. Anybody read this book? The seminarian, all right. So, of the 542,000 books I acquired during seminary, this book, written by a Native American writer and activist, was probably my favorite. Lent is around the corner, a time where we're asked to go through a spiritual inventory, right? And let go of things that have been keeping us from truth and light and love. And I believe that this book can provide us with a way of seeing, a way of understanding, in this time, and understanding our lives. So King starts each of his essays more or less the same way, like this. There is a story that I know. It's about the earth and how it floats in space on the back of a turtle. I've heard this story many times, and each time someone tells the story, it changes. Sometimes the change is simply in the voice of the storyteller, and sometimes the change is in the details. But in all the tellings, of all the tellers, the world never leaves the turtle's back, and the turtle never swims away. One time, a young girl in the audience asked about the turtle and the earth. If the earth was on the back of a turtle, what was below the turtle? Another turtle. The storyteller told her. And below that turtle, another turtle. And below that, why, another turtle. The girl began to laugh, enjoying the game, I imagine. So how many turtles are there? The storyteller shrugged. No one knows for sure, but it's turtles all the way down. The truth about stories is that that's all we are. The truth about stories is that that's all we are. That sentence still rings in my ears. It's how Mr. King ends each essay, though, where things really hit home for me. He writes, that story I just told you, it's yours. Do with it what you will. Tell it to friends. Forget it. But don't say in the years to come that you would have lived your life differently. If only you had heard it. You've heard it now. And this is where I want to start today's sermon. It's where I want to go. I want to talk about stories, our stories, the stories of our lives. At this point, though, I'm going to ask for a bit of an indulgence in the spirit of my friend, the Reverend Dr. Otis Voss III. I'm going to ask you now to turn to your neighbor. Yes, that neighbor. No, really, turn. You know I can see you. Right. Excellent. Now say to your neighbor, repeat after me. Say, neighbor.
Neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
We get to write.
We get to write.
The stories of our lives.
The stories of our lives.
Well done. Change is happening already. Yes, we get to write the stories of our lives. I wanted to say that out loud. Today, maybe, of all days. It's been a long week. With all of our ongoing struggles, also in injustice and oppression, with all of our daily challenges, challenges of life, work, and family, it's worth remembering that our lives and the way we live them, those can be the testament of our personal resistance. Our lives are a manifesto of resilience and a, well, just say the book of our, against our cynicism and despair. It's all we have. Our stories are all we have. How we write them matters. To be fair, Lent is a perfect time of year to talk about stories. And while I understand this may be a time of commitment for some of you, right? A time of tribulation for others. Anybody giving up chocolate for Lent? Blasphemy. I like to think that Lent is a time to question who we are, how we got here, right? And the life that we happen to be living. So while I had you captive this morning, I wanted to do a bit of creative visualization. And I know you're excited. So what I want us to imagine is that we're the author of a novel. The novel of our life. Better still, imagine that our doings are the words and phrases, the anecdotes and the parables, the story arcs and the plot devices of that novel. Got it? Good. Here's the twist. I want us to imagine that living, when we are living in such a way that the novel that we're writing is one we would recommend to a friend. Ouch, right? Because that's the key. Living is one thing. Living in such a way that your story is something someone else may find worth reading, that's entirely different. This idea is not my idea. I borrowed it from the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, from his book Twilight of the Idols, where he describes the meaning of life as a life that's filled with integrity and perfect authenticity. Authenticity, that aligning of action with belief and desire, regardless, perhaps even heedless, of pressure or influence. For Nietzsche, authenticity was a purely artistic act. Ultimately, we should look to no role models, gather no advice from friends, seek no guidance from heroes. Instead, we are called to strike a path as unique as we are. Only then, he says, only then will our life's work, the work that is our life, only then will it be truly meaningful. Nietzsche's nothing if not dramatic. Okay, so yeah, that's a lot. So while the requirement for novelty in art, that's something maybe we can debate in the coffee hour or some other day. The idea that our lives are a novel that we are supposed to write, I think that's one worth considering every day. Because if we let our culture, our careers, and the general busyness of our lives distract us from our one true job, the job of living our lives, then we're in trouble. We're in trouble because who else is going to do that job for us? We're all loaded up, aren't we? We reflexively overfill every hour, our brimming days a slippery, seamless slide into weeks, months, and years. And the next thing we know, we are saying to each other, where has the time gone? And writing that script of an intentional life, that one that we were supposed to be lining up with the values that we hold, like love and service and spirituality, justice, well, that was all just a wish list we handed off to a ghostwriter years ago. As my friend Ferris Bueller once said to me, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it. Can I confess something? That was my fear, this FOMO, right? This fear of missing out. 4 years ago, I was successful by most definitions of successful. I was a corporate executive. I led large teams. I talked CEOs out of millions of dollars. I had bonus checks. I was also working an undetermined number of hours each week. I had conference calls starting at 7 a.m. I was answering email at midnight on Sundays. I was traveling every week. I spent more time with my boss than my wife, more time with my clients than my kids. And while I am genuinely baffled how any of that happened to a guy who once dreamed of being a philosopher, I am reminded of John Lennon, who said, "Life was what happened while you were making other plans." 25 years ago, I had plans. I didn't mean to drop those plans. I had reasons. I was broke. I needed a job. I made what I hoped was the best decision at the time. Every time. From the choices that I felt I had available to me. And in between, life happened. But I wonder what would have happened to my story if someone had stopped me in all of my busyness, looked me in the eye like I am looking at you this morning, and said to me, "It doesn't have to be this way." If you're like me, you look into the faces of the kids in the congregation and imagine who they might one day be. I'm pretty sure we all do this, right? At one time or another. The potential that they represent can be overwhelming. But when was the last time you looked in the mirror and saw that same potential? When you last asked yourself, "Am I the person I once imagined? And if I'm not, when am I going to take up that project? When am I going to start on that chapter?" Now, truth is, none of us come to, or better still, come back to a project like this from scratch. We've all lived a bit, regardless of exactly how old today found us. Metaphorically speaking, the life that is our, the novel that is our life has at least a few pages already filled with some spurious scribbling, right? And that's okay. That's perfectly fine. But what I want to do today is imagine that this next page, maybe see it for the first time in a long time, that what gets put on that page is at least in some respect up to us. Yes, certain things have to be here. Yes, some of us have more pages to work with. All that is true. And as the author of our stories, we get to decide the shape of at least some of that story. I should pause here and note that change is often easier said than done. Trapped as I was in my professional life, I had no idea what else I could do, much less what I wanted to do. Change for me was unimaginable. I suppose you could say I had writer's block. Maybe some of you today feel that way too. So, if you are one of those imagining that next page with some uncertainty, with some trepidation, some now what, for you I want to offer up a particular literary device: the plot twist. You know what I'm talking about, right? The story's going along one way and boom, things change. Something surprising happens. As the author of the story that is our life, this is where we get to throw those future readers a curveball. Just to keep them on their toes, you know, keep them guessing. But if you're like me and you need some inspiration, I have our Google overlords for that too. For some real-life examples of plot twists. So in that spirit, I want to offer up the following for our collective consideration and inspiration. Did you know that Walt Disney was fired from his job in 1919 because, and I quote, he lacked imagination. Did you know that Stan Lee of Marvel Comics published his first comic book when he was 39? Julia Child, any cooks here? Julia Child, right? Published her cookbook when she was 50. Her PBS show started a year after that. Here's one you may not know. And bonus points if you recognize this name. We aren't keeping track, by the way. Frances Woofenden, anybody? Frances Woofenden? You should know this because it's cool. She's won over 100 medals in competitive water skiing. She started water skiing when she was 50. Giorgio Armani started designing clothes after his 60th birthday. Laura Ingalls Wilder published her first book, Little House in the Big Woods, when she was 65. Painters, anybody? Painters, artists, yes. Grandma Moses started her painting career when she was 76. Gladys Burrell ran her first marathon when she was 86. For those of us who have small issues with continuing education never being complete, Nola Ops completed her bachelor's degree when she was 95. She then went right on and finished her master's degree when she was 98. My favorite was Georgina Harwood, who celebrated her 100th birthday by skydiving, and then followed that up with a swim with great white sharks. Can you imagine what that birthday invitation looked like? So if you twist my arm, I will confess that the younger me took the idea of plot lines in the Write My Life as a Novel, maybe a tattoo, seriously. For example, one of my old journals actually has the line, I want to write the deeds of my life in the book of life with words of fire. Look, all I can say are there are worse inspirations than the Lord of the Rings. But this does bring me to an important point. Plot twists don't have to be life-threatening to be good. The point is to shake our stories up, not require a dance with a Nazgul or skydive with a shark. Let me say it this way. Just because our lives are not fantastical in scope does not mean that our stories are less worthy. To quote the wizard Gandalf the Grey, some believe it is only great power that can hold evil in check. But that is not what I have found. I found it is in the small, everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay. Small acts of kindness and love. I take great comfort in these words, because given some of my recent life choices, I would probably never be rich. This is a shame, because I would be an excellent rich person. But believe me when I say that no one was more surprised than I was when I finally realized that being me was more important than being rich or successful. I had it wrong. And it literally took me decades to figure this out. I had to discover that my greatest joy came from those around me. That rather fundamental realization is what led to me being here with you this morning and telling you at least some of the things I wish someone had told me. Now, I won't be rich, and no, there will be no Mount Doom or words of fire for me. Instead, I get to have another kind of gift. I get to live a different sort of life. And that will be awesome. But as we turn to the close, I want to tell you at least one more thing, one more of my roadblocks. Something that stalled me for years, and it's something I suspect may be a roadblock for some of you now thinking about your stories, and it's this. It turns out that there really is no such thing as a perfect story. That may be worth repeating. No such thing as a perfect story. Now, there are a lot of reasons why this is, but one of the main ones is that there is, well, it's just a fact. There will never be enough time. There will always be more to do, more to say, more to learn, more to explore. There's never enough pages. The possibilities of life are endless, and the crime that is the human condition is that we are only given just so much time, with no sequels and no do-overs. Now, what I take from that now is that mistakes have to happen. Like the many, many characters in some of my favorite books, I am going to get it wrong. We are all going to get it wrong. We simply don't have time to make it perfect. And just as tragically, our story of a life lived with integrity, with meaning, and it's never going to hit perfect authenticity. It's just not. And you know what? So what? The sooner we realize that mistakes not only happen, but are exactly what make our lives interesting, what make our stories human, then maybe the sooner we can take that risk, a risk that creates, a risk that changes things, a cliffhanger, if you will, that sets up another chapter. So in that spirit, I invite you to consider this. We are all saved from perfection. Wait, I'm a minister now, so I can do this a little better. Please join me in the attitude of prayer. By the power invested in me on this day, by the spirits of life and love, and in accordance with natural law and human nature, I hereby absolve you, my friends and neighbors. I absolve you of the sin of perfection. Ego, te, absolvo. Damn. Now you're absolutely free to make your plot twists really interesting. My friends, change is an act of creation, and while we may not be God, our lives, our stories, those are ours to write. We get to write the stories of our lives. And yes, that means you, and you, and you, and you, and you. All of us. In this Lenten season, I invite you all, I invite you to imagine the pen in your hand, on your fingers, on the keyboard, feeling that empty page. Your doings will be the words and phrases, the anecdotes and the parables, the story arcs and the plot devices of the story that you have yet to write. We are our stories. We are those turtles, we human beings. We are stories all the way down. Remember Nietzsche? A meaningful life is a novel that you'd recommend to a friend? That idea is yours now. Write it down. Tell it to friends. Live it boldly. Or forget it entirely. Do with it what you will. But don't say in the years to come that you would have lived your life differently if only you had heard it. You have heard it now. The truth about stories is that that's all we are.